to Animal Companions. This is Joyce, your radio reading service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading another chapter of The Case of the Careless Kitten by Earl Stanley Gardner, and if we have some time, I'll be reading some articles and newsletters about the animals in our lives. We're going to begin today's reading with The Case of the Careless Kitten by Earl Stanley Gardner. In the last chapter, we learned that Gerald Shore had asked Perry Mason to represent him. He was afraid that Lieutenant Drag might convict him of first-degree murder, given the evidence that was available at this time. And now we begin Chapter 11. Helen Kendall had taken off her coat, hat, and gloves, and was reading a book when she heard a car in the driveway. She glanced at her wristwatch. Surely no one could be coming at this hour. But unmistakably, the car was turning into the private driveway. Then, as the driver kicked out the clutch and she heard the succession of knocks and bangs which came from under the hood, her heart caught, skipped a beat, then started pounding. She felt certain that there was only one motor in the world which was in quite such a state of disrepair, yet still running. She went quickly to the door. Jerry Templar was getting out of the car, moving with that slow efficiency which seemed almost to border on awkwardness, yet, which somehow managed to accomplish so much. He looked slim and straight in his uniform, and Helen realized the army training had given him a certain determination, an assurance of his ability to accomplish things which had not been there a few months earlier. This man was in some ways a stranger to her, a familiar friend who had become invested with a new breathtaking power to affect her life, to make her heart skip beats, and then to pound wildly. On no account would she mention the murder or anything of the family complications. Helen decided he had come tonight, unannounced, to see her. With Jerry, there were more important things to talk about, perhaps tonight. "Oh, Jerry," she exclaimed, "I'm so glad to see you." "Hello, darling. I saw lights and thought perhaps you hadn't gone to bed. Can I come in for a few minutes?" She took his hand, drew him into the hallway, and closed the door. "Yes," she said, rather unnecessarily. Helen led the way into the big living room and dropped down on the davenport. She watched Jerry curiously to see where he would sit. Was he going to the chair on the other side of the fireplace, or was he coming over to her on the davenport? Shamelessly, she willed him to come over beside her, but he just stood there in the middle of the room. "You look tired, Jerry." He seemed surprised. "Tired? I'm not. Oh, my mistake. Cigarette?" She held a box toward him. That did it. He crossed the room slowly, took a cigarette, and settled down beside her. "Where have you been all evening?" he demanded. Helen's eyes dropped. "Out," she said. "I know that. I've called you 4 times. 20 cents? You shouldn't throw money around like that." "Where were you?" It was almost an accusation. "Oh, here and there," she replied evasively. "No special place." "Alone?" Helen looked up at him, and her eyes were mocking. "You're mighty curious, soldier," she drawled. "Do all your women sit home every night on the chance that you may call?" "I haven't got any women," he said roughly. "You know I..." "Go on." Instead of going on, however, Jerry jumped up and began pacing the floor. "Where's your aunt?" he demanded suddenly. "In bed?" "She was the last time I saw her." Then, very casually, "So are Como and the housekeeper?" "Your aunt doesn't like me." "Such perception, Jerry. I'm amazed. What's she got against me?" There was a silence. "I guess I won't answer that one," Helen finally decided. There was another silence. "Were you out with George Albert tonight?" "It's none of your business, of course. But as it happened, I was with Uncle Gerald all evening." "Oh?" Jerry looked relieved and settled down on the davenport again. "When are you going to your officers' training camp, Jerry?" "As soon as I get back to the outfit next week, I guess." "Monday? 6 days more? Helen murmured. "You're not thinking about anything much or anybody these days except the war, are you?" "Well, there is a job to be done." Yes, but we've still got to live, Helen said softly. If she could only get him to break through that self-imposed wall of silence, if he would only stop being so ridiculously noble, so self-disciplined, and let himself go for once. She turned toward him, chin up, lips half parted. They were all alone in the big house. The ticking of the grandfather clock in the hall was loud. Jerry seemed to steel himself against her. He started speaking, and there was no verbal fumbling. His words were swift, close-clipped. His gray eyes looked into hers with tenderness, but with that determination she had seen so much of the last few days. I don't know what's ahead of me. You don't know what's ahead of me. There's a nasty job of mopping up, and that there's got to be some facelifting in the world. Don't you see that at a time like this, a man has to abandon and try to forget some things that mean more to him, personally, selfishly, than anything else in the world? If a man's in love with a woman, for instance... His voice trailed off, as suddenly from Matilda Shore's bedroom they heard the sound of some article of furniture crashing to the floor. Then a moment later came the unmistakable thump, thump, thump of a cane and the shuffle of heavy steps crossing the floor. The caged lovebirds startled throaty, shrill chirpings, and they chattered excitedly. "Your Aunt Matilda," said Jerry in a hollow voice. Helen tried to speak, but for the moment her throat was constricted so that the words wouldn't come out. Jerry looked at her curiously. "What's the matter, darling? You look scared." That's not Aunt Matilda." "Nonsense. You can't mistake those steps. The shuffle and thump and the shuffle and thump. You can even hear this peculiar dragging sound of her foot when she..." Helen's fingers clutched his arm. "Jerry, it isn't she. She isn't home. She's at the hospital." There was a moment while her words and her fear penetrated into Jerry's consciousness. Then he was on his feet, brushing her to one side despite her efforts to cling to his arm. "All right, let's see who it is." "No, no, Jerry, don't. Don't go alone. There's danger. Something horrible happened tonight. I didn't want to tell you, but..." He might or might not have heard her. She only knew her words had no effect. With his jaw set, he moved swiftly toward the closed door into the corridor leading to Matilda's bedroom. "Where's the light switch?" he asked. Helen raced to his side, suddenly aware that Jerry, a stranger to the house, was groping his way through the half-darkness. She clicked on the light switch. "Jerry, be careful. Oh, my dear, please." From behind Aunt Matilda's bedroom door, there was a silence, as though the intruder might be standing still or might be moving with cat-like stealth to surprise Jerry when he opened the door. Only the high-pitched chatter of the lovebirds grew to a hysterical crescendo of bird talk. "Please, Jerry, please, don't open it. If someone should be in there and..." He said, "Let go of my arm." She still clung to him. "Let go of my arm," he repeated, shaking her off. "I may need that arm. Let's see what this is all about." He turned the knob of the door, raised his foot, and kicked it open. A gust of cold air billowing in from an open window came sweeping through the doorway into the corridor. The room was dark, save for the illumination which flowed in from the lighted hallway, an illumination which threw a grotesque, distorted shadow of Jerry Templar along the floor of the bedroom. The birds became suddenly silent. "The lights," Helen said, and darted past Jerry's side to reach for the light switch. He grabbed her shoulder. "Don't be a fool. Keep out of this. Tell me." A stabbing spurt of flame came from the dark corner near the head of Matilda's bed, a blush-red spurt of flame that was ringed with orange. The report of the gun boomed through the confines of the room. She heard the bullet smack against the door jamb, even as a swift whisper of air brushed her face. She saw the drab darkness of the wood burst into lighter-colored splinters as the wood beneath the aged exterior was ripped into a view by the bullet. She felt the blast of fine particles of wood and plaster stinging her skin. Jerry had her shoulder then, was jerking her back, shielding her body with his own. The gun roared again. The second bullet hit with a meaty smock against something at her side. She felt Jerry's body close to hers spin around in a quick half circle. His hands were reaching out, clutching. Then she was frantically trying to support a dead weight. His legs buckled and he went crashing to the floor, taking her with him. And that's the end of chapter 11 in The Case of the Careless Kitten by Earl Stanley Gardner. Next week, we'll find out just exactly what happened with that bullet when it hit Jerry. And now we'll turn to some articles and newsletters about the animals in our lives. This first article is called Raising Puppies with a Purpose. Carol and Brian Gregory live in Seattle, Washington, where rain, coffee, and community are part of everyday life. But for the Gregorys, life is also measured in puppies. So far, they've raised 6 guide dog puppies for Guide Dogs for the Blind, known as GDB, and are on their 7th with Flyer, a 6-month-old golden retriever, yellow lab mix. It's a familiar rhythm for the couple: love deeply, train thoughtfully, and let go with purpose. At the heart of this organization are puppies with a purpose, Carol says. Each one is unique, and each one will go on to a unique life with their partner. Knowing what's on the other side of raising is what drives us to do our best. The other side became real when they met the guide dog they helped raise, Nakatsuki, now living and working with her handler in Grand Junction, Colorado. The reunion was emotional, joyful, validating, and deeply meaningful. Natsuki was overly excited, Carol recalls with a smile. Seeing her in the harness with her new partner was incredibly touching, and then watching them settle in together, how quickly they bonded, and how well they worked as a team. It was so satisfying. The match, Carol said, was perfect, a testament to the care and expertise GDB's guide dog mobility instructors put into every placement. Letting go of a puppy is never easy, but the Gregorys have found a way to honor the process of saying goodbye while making room for what comes next. When we return a dog to campus, we immediately get another puppy. Carol explains, you're giving back an animal you've grown to love, and then you take another one, so there's a place for that love to grow again. Brian agrees. You're sad when you leave them, but sometimes they're eager to go, tail wagging, ready for the next chapter, and then you drive home with a new puppy in your lap, and it helps. Over the years, each puppy has brought its own personality and its own story. One standout is Vivi, a female pup who attended the Seattle production of Hamilton. There's a big cannon blast in that show, Carol laughs, and somehow Vivi knew exactly when it was coming. She barked at the exact same moment as the boom. It blended perfectly into the production. Moments like that add levity to the work of raising guide dogs. But the Gregorys say they never do it alone. As long as puppy club members Carol and Brian have found a strong sense of community among fellow raisers, some of whom have raised 20 or even 30 dogs. There's a common purpose, Brian says. You learn from each other, you support each other, and you really feel connected. The Gregorys say the sense of care extends throughout the GDB, from campus staff and trainers to leadership and volunteers. Carol says it's something you can feel. There's heart everywhere. You feel it from the people who care for the dogs, from our puppy club, even when you meet leadership at events, and the support is real. That support includes comprehensive veterinary care, covered fully by Guide Dogs for the Blind, something that Gregorys deeply value. They don't skimp, Carol says. They take care of these animals, and knowing you're not alone in this makes all the difference. In addition to being puppy raisers, the Gregorys are donors and members of GDB's Legacy Society. We truly love the heart of this organization and how many lives are touched by the amazing people, puppies, and trained service dogs. There's something else Carol treasures, the way a guide dog puppy changes the world around them. When you walk down the street with a puppy in a little green vest, everything shifts, she says. People look up, they smile, they ask questions. In a busy city where people often rush from place to place, a guide dog puppy becomes an invitation to connect, to slow down, to share something hopeful. That energy, Carol says, is delightful. It's part of what inspired Carol to deepen her involvement with GDB by starting a new Seattle puppy club, Guide Dogs for the Blind Seattle Elliott Bay Puppy Raisers Club, where she's actively recruiting and supporting new member raisers. For Carol and Brian, raising guide dog puppies isn't just volunteer work. It's purposeful, it's community building, and it's a reminder that small beginnings, 4 paws at a time, can change lives. This article from Guide Dogs for the Blind is titled Raising Puppies with a Purpose. Our next article is a question and answer. I can always expect my pup to roll in the grass whenever we go outside. He seems to really love his grass shimmy time, even if it's a little muddy. Why do dogs roll in the grass? And is it normal? And here's the answer. Yes, it's completely normal for dogs to roll in the grass. Typically, dogs enjoy doing it because it's fun for them, it feels good, and they're making their scent, among other reasons. We spoke with dog trainer and a veterinarian to learn about this super cute and sometimes stinky behavior. So why do dogs roll in the grass? Does your canine companion find a plush patch of grass to roll on no matter where you go? There are a few explanations as to why they might do this, and here are some of the common reasons your dog may roll around in the grass. Number one, scent masking. Scent masking is when a dog disguises their scent with environmental odors to protect themselves from potential prey or rivals. Used as a survival tactic by wolf ancestors, dogs might use smelly materials like grass, manure, or dead worms to make their own scent. Masked. Communication. If you notice your pooch is having a wag-worthy time when rolling in the grass, they could be trying to share a message with their doggy friends. We'd like to think that this could be a basic introduction of who they are and their favorite foods. Dogs have a scent gland on their body that they use to communicate with other dogs, says Amanda Farah, CPDT-KA, a certified dog trainer and coordinator of national training and behavior for Best Friends Animal Society based in Kanab, Utah. A dog who rolls in the grass may be leaving its scent behind so dogs know where they were, or they may be covering their scent of other dogs who were previously there. Skin relief. The texture of grass can provide a comfort to a dog who feels itchy. Rolling in the grass allows them to get those hard-to-reach spots, like along their back and base of their tail, acting as their personal back scratcher. Some dogs have figured out that when they're itchy, certain surfaces are satisfying to rub against. Carpet, sand, and grass are favorites for many dogs. If your dog spends a lot of time rolling in the grass or rubbing on other surfaces, it's recommended to consult a vet to rule out potential skin conditions, allergies, or even fleas. Enjoyment. This behavior could simply come down to dogs just loving it, so much so that they can even see themselves smiling as they roll. After all, we know the smallest things can bring our fun-loving pups the greatest joy, like worn-out socks and random sticks. The tactile sensation could feel good, similar to us stretching, says Sabrina Kong, veterinarian based in California and veterinary consultant at WeLoveDoodles.com. Not to mention the scent of grass and scents in the grass can be fascinating for them to sniff out and even eat. You can bring the outdoors in and give your dog safe places to roll with indoor grass like Purview Pet Products Turf. This article was actually a question and answer about why do dogs roll in the grass. Next article comes from the special edition of Paw Print, A Cat's Brain, How They Think, Learn, and Communicate. And this particular article is about zoomies, those frantic runs around the house. Although it may feel like it, it's not your cat's goal to wake you up at 3 a.m. If you're a cat parent, you've likely seen your kitty get a case of the zoomies. One second she's sitting peacefully, the next she's running back and forth across the house, almost as if she's chasing something that's not even there. While the zoomies are a common behavior found in both cats and dogs, sometimes dealing with a frenzied pet, and especially in the middle of the night, can be frustrating. Here's what you need to know about cat zoomies and what causes their erratic behavior. As the name suggests, you'll know your cat has the zoomies when they zoom frantically running around the house, and then almost as quickly as they started, the zoomies end, and your kitty is back to snoozing on the couch. The zoomies typically look as if a switch has flipped, says Pam Johnson Bennett, author and owner of Cat Behavior Associates. From a cat parent's perspective, the zoomies may look as if the cat has suddenly gone crazy for no obvious reason. But there's a technical term for this behavior, frenetic random activity periods, or F-R-A-P, fraps. When cats get an intense burst of energy, running around the house is a simple way for them to get that energy out. So why do cats get the zoomies? Well, there's excess energy. The top reason cats experience the zoomies is pent-up energy. Cats rest and sleep for a majority of the day to conserve energy for short, very active periods. Without intentional exercise and activity, your kitty needs to find a way to get that extra energy out, resulting in a case of the zoomies. Cats are ambush predators, and when they conserve energy for multiple short bursts of hunting, says Johnson Bennett. For indoor cats who don't get enough exercise, they may engage in the zoomies as a much-needed energy release. Cats of all ages can experience zoomies from pent-up energy, but the behavior may be more common in the younger cats and kittens who simply have more energy to expend. Make sure to engage your feline in fun exercises throughout the day. This will allow him to use the pent-up energy without knocking over vases and turning up rugs. Plus, you'll bond with your kitty over playtime and enrichment activities, which will lead to him having a happier and a healthier life. Acute pain. While this is a far less common reason cats experience the zoomies, it's important to know when the behavior may indicate your kitty is in pain so that you can get him to the vet as soon as possible. If your cat has fleas or itchy skin, racing around may be the cat's way of trying to escape the feeling. An aging cat may also be losing eyesight or hearing and could get spooked by things more easily, causing a frantic run around the house. So how do you know if your cat's in pain or just has some excess energy to burn? Watch for other indicators of pain, such as irritability, scratching, or excess licking. If a cat engages in licking a particular area repeatedly in addition to the zooming account, it may be an indication of pain or anxiety. If your cat isn't clearly exhibiting signs of pain, if the zoomies are ongoing after regular exercise, it's time for a veterinary appointment. Post-poop zoomies. Some cats seem to enjoy a victory lap after a trip to the litter box. If your cat gets the zoomies after pooping, be sure to pay attention for signs of constipation, such as discomfort, vomiting, defecation outside the litter box, or a change in stool. Even if your cat doesn't clearly exhibit these signs, it's never a bad idea to check in with your veterinarian, especially if the post-poop zoomies are a new behavior. If you can rule out digestive issues, make sure your cat's litter box is getting cleaned regularly. Cats may get zoomies after pooping in order to run away from an unpleasant smell. Plus, a clean litter box will prevent urinary problems and bacterial infection in your cat, and it keeps her going in the litter box instead of on your favorite rug. So, how do we prevent middle-of-the-night zoomies? Cat parents everywhere know the problem all too well. Cats spend 15 to 20 hours a day resting or sleeping, and it seems like the only time they are awake and ready to play is when you're trying to get your beauty rest. If your cat is notorious for waking you up with a late-night zoom attack, it's time to find a solution. If a cat frequently engages in the zoomies, it's probably an indication that the cat needs more exercise. Make sure your kitty is getting enough exercise with regular playtime. Break out the feather and string for your cat's favorite toy. Johnson Bennett suggests engaging in at least 2 15-minute interactive play sessions each day. It's also important to provide mental exercise and satisfaction, so don't just exhaust the cat, but instead play in a way that allows your kitty to stalk and plan. Playtime is just as much mental exercise as it is physical. To help tire your cat out with mental stimulation, test drive a few interactive toys that allow cats to play and then get a reward for their efforts. Setting out your kitty's favorite interactive toy just before bedtime will help get that extra kitty energy out and will hopefully result in a full night's sleep for you, too. This article, Zoomies, Those Frantic Runs Around the House, is by Jessica Comstock, and it appeared in the special edition of Paw Prints, A Cat's Brain, How They Think, Learn, and Communicate. Did you know that there's scientific evidence that proves that cats are just adorable? According to research, cats' physical traits that resemble those of infants, and these traits are referred to as kinder schema or baby schema. Decades ago, ethologist Conrad Lorenz proposed that because infants look cute, parents are more motivated to care for them. Lorenz coined the term baby schema, which describes such facial features as a large head, a high and protruding forehead, large eyes, and a small nose and mouth, features that change as the child ages into adulthood. Researchers discovered that this phenomena occurs in cats too, and the study determined that cats also elicit nurturing behavior in humans. Researchers manipulated pictures of cats, dogs, and babies, increasing and decreasing their baby schema, and found links between the baby-like cuteness of a cat and the human interest in caring for it. Without all these feline features and tactics, humans might still care for their cats, but a cat's MO certainly makes the morning howls for food or companionship all the more bearable. Well, this information about cats being so cute comes also from the Paw Prints Special Edition, A Cat's Brain, How They Think, Learn, and Communicate. Well, that completes our readings for today. I do hope you've enjoyed them, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Until then, this is Joyce for Animal Companions and for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Be well, everyone. Stay healthy. Be happy. Bye-bye.